Hello, and thank you for tuning in. You are listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. You can listen and subscribe to the show for free on Spotify, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, Blog Talk Radio, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and Audible. For network or show information, visit ByteRadio.me. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my special returning guest is Emily Thoreau-Thurrett, and we will be talking about her new Grief and Happiness Handbook and cards. In these times of uncertainty and loss, all of us need to support to effectively navigate life's challenges with tools that can make the journey a bit easier. With much personal experience with grief and loss, Emily can offer audiences real answers on how to deal with grief and move forward to a life filled with happiness and love. Emily Thoreau-Thurrett is an author, podcast host, speaker, and facilitator of the Grief and Happiness Alliance. Her books include Loving and Living Your Way Through Grief, A Comprehensive Guide to Reclaiming and Cultivating Joy and Carrying On in the Face of Loss, and also the Grief and Happiness Handbook, a supportive guide to help you reclaim your life while grieving, the Grief and Happiness Cards, and Gentle Support for Dealing with Grief and Finding Happiness. For more information, you can visit her website, which is www.griefandhappiness.com, or you can also visit lovingandlivingyourwaythroughgrief.com. Okay, with that, I'd like to welcome Emily to the show. Good day, Emily.
Aloha. It's nice to see you, or hear you, rather.
Thank you. Yeah, it has been just a little over 2 years since we spoke, and then during that show, we talked about the Loving and Living Through Grief book, and so now I'm anxious to find out about your newest book and cards. Now, you are on Maui, and of course, Maui's been in the news with such devastation from the fire there, so that island has been going through a whole lot of grief. So can you just share with us? I mean, because you focus on grief and happiness. So tell us, you know, from your perspective, just, you know, what you see and how the islanders are coping with their grief.
Well, this has been just, it's hard to find the right word to describe the experience because it's been tragic and just very, very sad experience that we had here. I've heard so many stories that have happened to people that have been just kind of beyond comprehension that we live. Maui is just an absolutely beautiful place. And for just all of a sudden, within a matter of a couple of hours, to lose a whole community, including everything, the stores, businesses, jobs, post offices, and that's all beyond the homes that people have lived in, especially lots of people who are Hawaiian who've lived here in families, groups for many, many years. And it was shocking. And one thing I think a lot of people don't realize that it wasn't just Lahaina that burned. We had fires all over the island. I live about a half an hour away from Lahaina, and one of the first fires started just a couple of miles from me and woke me up in the middle of the night with heavy smoke and was very frightening. And we ended up welcoming into our home here two people that were evacuated from that fire along with their two dogs and two cats. We did have lots of shelters that opened up right away, and they would take like one animal, and that animal had to either be on a leash or in a crate, and they had two of each, and they didn't want to leave anything behind. So we were able to let them stay with us, and they stayed with us for 6 weeks. And in their case, they were really fortunate that their house didn't burn. It had lots of damage to it, smoke damage and broken windows and that sort of thing. And they lost all the beautiful foliage that was around their house. There were just tons of it. And all but, I think, two houses in their whole neighborhood burned to the ground. So it was amazing that theirs didn't. So they've been able to return and continue the work on fixing it into a livable state.
Wow. Yeah, I can't imagine, you know, the amount of grief, you know, and, you know, in the loss of life that the people experienced. I know that the Aloha spirit is, I'm sure, helped elevate, you know, the kind of the consciousness, I guess, of the people there to be able to come together, to be able to, I guess, take it just step by step.
That's really true. And that's really significant, too, because aloha, the word aloha means a lot of different things, but the primary one that people think of is love. And it's really shared freely here on the island. And the acts of compassion and all the things that people have done for each other, you wouldn't believe how much stuff was donated very, very quickly to help people with what they needed, because literally thousands of people had no homes. They lost all their possessions, no food, the clothes on their backs. Mm-hmm. And people on the island just emptied out their closets and brought food and made contributions. And I know I set up a little Facebook fundraiser because I usually do that for my birthday and do pretty well with that, with getting support from my nonprofit, the Grief and Happiness Alliance nonprofit. But I thought, well, I'll just try this for the Maui Food Bank, because the Maui Food Bank distributes a lot of food on the island already, and they're all set up to do that, and I knew it would be a really good place to do it. And within a couple of days, I had $6,000 donated to the Maui Food Bank through that one little fundraiser. And that's the sort of thing that happened with a lot of people. We just opened up our hearts and our arms and did whatever we could, and that's been quite beautiful. That the tragedy and the things that people have faced are just kind of beyond belief.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, the one thing that comes out of that, a tragedy like that, is the compassion, is the,
yes,
is the love, and, you know, and, you know, to have it happen to such a community like, you know, the Lahaina and, you know, the Maui community, I think it just kind of makes that that compassion even, you know, compound, you know, in the sense where, you know, we're, a lot of times we'll see, you know, tragedy happen in maybe third world countries where, you know, it's tragedy, but, you know, it's also there, you know, people in some environments have a really challenging, you know, life to live, you know, and, you know, to have this happen to such an old, established, loving community to begin with kind of just shows the extent, you know, of just how far and wide, you know, compassion can be.
Yes. Yes, it does. It's just amazing how kind and beautiful people can be to each other.
Now, with your work with grief, and we'll talk about your alliance a little bit later, but with your work in happiness and grief, you know, what can you talk about the process of moving from grief to happiness, and the idea of, now, you know, it's been said people grieve very differently, and that, you know, the amount of time it takes to process one's grief is as individual as the person, but from your work, can you tell us a little bit about the idea of, you know, that process of transformation and timing?
That's an interesting question, because I have lots of people say, well, how long does it take to get over grief? And my answer is, you don't. You know, if you have someone who you love, like I've had two husbands that I've loved them both deeply, and they both died, and I still love them. I didn't, you know, they say till death do you part in the traditional wedding vows, and it's kind of not like that. When my first husband who died, after he died, I thought, you know, I don't feel unmarried just because he transitioned out of the form he was in here. I still love him like his wife. And it took me quite a while to be able to get to the point where I was comfortable with the idea of meeting my next husband, because I had no intention of getting married again. I figured I had a great marriage and I didn't need to do that again, because I couldn't imagine one being as good. And it was different. Mm-hmm. It was totally different. And I still, now that both of them aren't here with me, I feel that I love them. I still carry them in my heart. It doesn't prevent me from having any kind of relationship with the rest of the world. It enhances it, actually, because that love was so deep and so beautiful that I focus on that instead of on the sorrow that comes with grief. So I don't see a timeline, to answer your question, for getting over grief, because I don't believe that happens. It changes. It evolves. I believe that you move forward to just being done with grief. You just move forward in your grief.
Yeah. Well, you know, that makes sense. It seems to me that, you know, the key, as you're explaining it, is the focus on the love in the good times. I mean, just the positive aspect of the individual being in your life, your husband being in your life, and not necessarily the fact that, you know, you can't continue making new memories like that, you know, in the present form. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
So now, when it comes time for processing grief, I believe you, if I remember correctly, believe in the power of journaling. You tell us? Can you tell us about, you know, about your belief in it and just the benefits?
Well, I think journaling is one of the most, if not the most, valuable thing to do to help process grief, because you can things out of your head. You know, if you just sit and think about, oh, I'm so sad and this is so bad, and then that's all that goes on around and around in your head, and it's hard to move forward. Where if you start writing things down, your brain kind of gets tired of writing the same thing. And so you'll find that you can break through and get deeper and find more interesting things to write about. And for me, I write every morning, actually before I get out of bed. I sit up in bed with my journal and do my morning journaling. And I usually do at least 3 pages, sometimes 4 or 5 every day. And I don't really count how much I've written. It's just I start and I finish. And I start off by expressing gratitude for a set of things, like for guidance, for inspiration, for comfort, for support, for protection, that sort of thing. I begin at the beginning of my journal. And then the next thing I write is whatever is kind of on my heart that day. And sometimes I do something that's called scripting. Andrew Kapp came up with that term, where you write as if whatever you'd like to have is already there. And it's kind of cool because I can put it like, if I'm writing as if it's 5 years from now and I write about what my life looks like at that point. And it's kind of interesting what comes out when you do that. And I find that the more I do that, the more interesting things come out and the more things actually start happening to me that I'm not sure I would have thought about before had I not journaled and discovered it while I was journaling. So that's one of the things that I do. Another thing that I do is kind of check in with my loved ones who have already transitioned. There's so many people in my life, my parents, my sister, lots of different friends, lots of relatives, all besides my two husbands. There's tons of people who've gone before me. And if I'm thinking about them in particular, I'll give you an example. A couple of days ago, I was thinking about my dad, and he's been gone a long time. And we had a good relationship. I admired and respected him so much. And he was a good example to me. I learned lots from him. But there was so much I didn't know about him. Because he grew up, he came out from Oklahoma. We've all heard about the Okies coming out in the dust storms, and that happened in the 30s, and he and his dad moved out here, and his two sisters, because his mom had died, they moved to California in 1929, so they said they weren't Okies, so wouldn't that always crack me up? But when they got to California, he and his dad, even though he was very young, they started working in the fields. And because they did get there early, his dad was able to be like a supervisor and had a little bit more job security when he got here as far as having something to do to support his family. And that was hard. The whole thing was very, very hard. His growing up when he was young was hard. He didn't have a whole lot of education. And he just never told me much about it at all. And I wish I would have known. And I started writing him about that the other day in my journal and telling him, you know, just saying how much I admired him and that in spite of all the things that he went through, he made an amazing, amazing life for himself and opportunities for me that most kids would never have because of his just willingness to step out and help people. He was a real veterans advocate. He'd been in World War II, and so he worked with the veterans a lot for the rest of his life. And he was just really cool. And the reason I'm telling you that is because I was exploring that sort of thing in my journal and thinking about, well, what did I really learn from him and that I didn't really think of at the time, or maybe I didn't think it was important at the time. And I felt closer to him after that than I have in years, and it felt really good. So you can pick, you know, anybody that you know and just write to them with them. And sometimes I feel like I'm getting answers from them, you know, telling me, me things that I would have loved for them to tell me face-to-face, but it's wonderful to hear them now. And I can't tell you for sure where that comes from, but I choose to believe it's coming from them. And that's just a wonderful thing to journal with. And then I go from there into kind of what my intention for the day is. And that would be it's not a to-do list. It's how I want my day to be. And then I always record at least three things that I'm grateful for. And I don't just say I'm grateful for my home. I say why, you know, whatever it is I'm grateful for, I write about that because that makes it deeper. And then the thing that I finish with before I say, and so it is at the end, I always say something that brought me joy the day before. And by writing about something that brought you joy, whenever you start to feel like you're not real happy or things aren't real great, I can flip through my journal and see every day something has been bringing me some form of joy. And that just feels really good. And it really has helped get me to the point where right now I feel happier now than I ever have been in my life. Even with all the loss I've dealt with, I'm very content and happy now.
Well, that's a wonderful practice, and you know, there's a lot in there, you know, as far as it's kind of like you're setting the parameters of your day, setting up your day in a positive way.
Yes. Yeah, it does. Yeah. It gets me started off on the right foot. I don't get up groggy, you know, and just kind of going through the motions. It gets me started with being awake. And one of the first things I do when I wake up in the morning and go, I woke up. This is really cool.
Yeah, I'm around for another day. Or at least starting off for another day. Now, do dreams ever kind of fall into that journaling process?
Yes, they do. A lot of times I don't remember my dreams, but if I really think about it before I go to sleep at night, a lot of times something will come through in a dream. For instance, last night I had a dream that when I woke up, I thought, oh, that was a horrible dream, and that just, how negative and stuff. And I thought, okay, I'm not going there. So I started writing about it, and I wrote what actually happened there, and I discovered that what I thought I was experiencing in my dream actually was a lesson in something that was good for me to think about. And I thought that was really cool. Because the person I dreamed about, I have no idea who this man was. In my dream, he was a neighbor, and he didn't like me, and he was doing things that irritated me. And when I wrote about it, I got it all worked out, and, you know, it felt good when I was through. Instead of carrying that negativity throughout the day with me, with this person that wasn't very pleasant, I was able to just say, well, he's on his path, and whoever he is, and it doesn't really concern me. He'd like it to concern me, but it's not going to, because it was his issue, not my issue, and I didn't have to worry about it all day. So I could smile and go on instead of being grumpy.
Well, you know, and I've had many of those that I've woken up and thinking, oh, Lord, you know, what a dream. But, you know, as you explained your process, you know, the process of going through the dream, you know, it seems that, you know, the idea of, you know, not taking on other people's problems. I mean, if other people have problems, you know, not to internalize that. You know, and that's an important lesson for a lot of folks, I think.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Well, that's really good. You know, that's a good. Now, is that the only kind of journaling you do is in the morning? Do you do it at night as well?
No, I focus on the morning because that's what works for me. I know some people always journal at night because that's what works for them. So you've got to be in tune with your own rhythm and see what serves you best and choose to do that.
Yeah. Okay, great. So now another one of these, the topics I'm bringing up are some of the things that you cover in your grief and happiness book topics. But one of the topics is about changing your surroundings. So tell us how that can serve in processing grief.
Well, I'll give you an example that happened with me. We had moved to Maui about 2 years before Ron died. He lived here a long time before I knew him and really loved it here. And when he was getting so sick, he said that's where he really wanted to be. So we just moved over here. Never thought I would. It just, you know, it happened and it seemed like the right thing to do. And he had, we got married later in life. And so he had, both of us had quite a collection of our own stuff, art in particular, things that we had collected over the years. And I really liked my things, and he really liked his things. And they didn't always go together really well for me, you know, with how they looked. And after he was gone for a while, I thought, instead of trying to have be surrounded by either mine or his, that I would have something that was different now for me, something that would support me, something I'd like to look at every day. And a friend of mine really loved these three particular artworks that I had hanging in my living room that were his. And I liked them. It's not that I didn't like them. They were beautiful, but I felt like I needed a change. And she loved those. And so I asked her if she'd like to have them, and she was absolutely thrilled. So then I had a big blank spot on my wall, and I had met somebody here on the island who's an artist who does beautiful work. I just love it. It's so positive and peaceful, and it just feels, I always, when I walk into a room and her art's in the room, it just feels good to me. And she had just had an experience where where she had sold her art always had, because of the problems with the pandemic, she no longer had access to that. And so all of a sudden her income was cut off from her art. So I bought four pieces of her work, and that's what hangs in my living room now. And I feel so good about that because I love her work. I love being able to support her when she could really use it. And I love being able to give something to my friend with those pieces that were Ron's that he loved and she loves. And it just kind of, all the way around, it felt really good. And now when I walk into my living room and I see those, it's just, to me, it's so peaceful and beautiful and different colors than I'd used before in decorating. And it just felt really good. So I think it's important. Now, I didn't change everything in my house. I changed some things that resonated with me that helped me feel better at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I can understand that, changing everything. But the symbolism in being able to, you know, pass on Ron's work, you know, to someone who you know would really enjoy it, you know, and you know, and I'm probably make them happy, you know, that it's being enjoyed in a new environment for it, but then also, you know, like you say, you know, creating that special new feeling for you, you know, that particular space is. Yeah, that's a really wonderful thing. So we're about halfway through the show, Emily. So I want to take just a quick 90-second break. And then when we come back, I want to talk a bit about the idea of self-care and how important that is during the grieving process. Okay?
Okay, that's great.
Okay, great. Okay, everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break. Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us again today. My special guest is Emily Thoreau-Threat, and we are talking about her new The Grief and Happiness Handbook, as well as cards, and we'll be talking about those shortly. For more information, you can visit Emily's website, which is www.griefandhappiness.com. Or you can also visit the website lovingandlivingyourwaythroughgrief.net. Okay, with that, we're back. Emily?
Hello, I'm here.
Great. So one of the things, you know, there's a very important theme that you talk about in your books and work, and that is the importance of self-care. So can you talk, you know, about its importance, and then, you know, particularly in times when grief is, you know, part of, you know, one's life, how especially important that is.
One thing, you know, people come to me frequently and say, what can I do? You know, when, especially early in grief, when somebody has just gone through the transition of someone that they love, and they, it's not unusual to feel kind of lost because your life is profoundly different all of a sudden. And they're not sure what the best thing is for them to do to just exist anymore. And what happens is people will frequently not be talking a lot. They might not remember to bathe. They might spend a lot of time in bed. They might not be eating very well. Either they're eating way too much or they're not eating anything healthy or they're not eating anything at all. And just the whole process of getting dressed or keeping clean is kind of beyond them because they're just in a different space. And when you recognize that that's happening with you, then you can do something about it. And you can make a special effort to be sure that you have, for instance, healthy food in the house that's easy to just grab and eat instead of relying on a bag of chips or something like that, mm-hmm. because it's there and it's easy. And the more self-care you can practice, it's a way of loving yourself, of nurturing yourself during this tough time. And I can guarantee that if you can get yourself in the shower or get into a bathtub, that you're going to feel better afterwards, even if you don't feel like you want to. To just do things like that really helps. And it's so important to take care of yourself and to be easy on yourself. Don't have big expectations of yourself. That whatever happens, just be kind to yourself.
Yeah. You know, that is so important. I have seen many people, you know, who get to the point where they allow their grief to really put them in a space that, you know, where seeing light and happiness and joy doesn't seem possible, you know, in that, mm-hmm. you know, and, you know, I've found myself trying to help someone, you know, in that space, and it can be challenging because, you know, I don't want to come off as, you know, you need to do this, or, you know, that kind of thing when, you know, because I don't want to sound like I'm, you know, negating, you know, their feelings, you know, their sorrow. But also I want to be able to, you know, maybe provide, you know, just a path, an activity or an action that may, you know, just shine a little bit of light, you know, into that darkness. But that's hard sometimes to be able to do that.
It is, and sometimes it might come across as too much. A lot of times just sitting with someone is really good. And instead of, for instance, telling them to eat healthy, mm-hmm. stop by and bring them a basket of strawberries that you found at a roadside stand and you thought of them, and so you just brought it to them to eat. So it's not telling them to do something. It's saying, here, I thought maybe you'd enjoy this. And just see if you can just sit with them and let them talk. You don't have to say anything. You can just sit there and having your presence, having somebody there with them, because I can't tell you how many people are isolated in their grief because nobody wants to be around somebody who's grieving, or they'll say something like that.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's good to know, because I have to admit, I'm not one that sits well, you know, but I can understand, you know, without you know, talking or, just providing some kind of lightness, you know, but I can understand that is a gift to be able to offer someone who is, you know, in that space.
I can give you an example of something somebody did for me. I hadn't been getting out of the house. It just was kind of beyond me at that point. And this one friend came over and she said, we're going to the beach, you know, just get in the car. It wasn't like a question, do you want to go or something like that. She just came and she said, this is what we're going to go do now. And we went there and I didn't have a whole lot of energy, but she brought a couple of beach chairs with her. So she put the beach chair up for me in the sand so that I could just sit there and enjoy the ocean. And she went on a walk. And it was a change of scene for me. It was, she wanted to go for a beach walk anyway. It wasn't a big deal for her to include me, you know, in driving me there. And by the time she got back from her walk, I just felt so much better. And she said, you want to stop and get something to eat on the way home? And I hadn't been doing anything like that. And we went to a restaurant I'd never been to before, just a small little place that was really nice, just not nice, expensive, but good food, good, interesting, different food. And by going in there, I felt more like talking than I'd felt in a long time. And she just kind of sat there and let me talk. And it just felt really, really good. And it didn't take her out of her way. She was going to have something to eat anyway. She was going to go on that beach walk anyway. She just included me in it. She just thought of me to take me along with that. And it really was kind of a point for me that made the difference, that I thought, I can do this. I can drive myself to the beach if I want to. I can leave the house, you know. I can do these things. And it felt really, really good. It was so positive and supporting.
Oh, you know, and it was probably good that she went and did her walk. So it kind of gave you that alone space, you know, that you were able to, you know, just be with the sand and water. So, yeah. Well, that's wonderful.
Do you remember
really
how much I love that?
Exactly. Now, there's one idea that you talk about, and that is saying yes, you know, to things, you know, to life, to opportunities that it can make you happier. So, you know, and I like that. I've talked to a few people who have actually, one person who went through a year of saying yes, you know, it's like, whoa, you know. But, you know, tell us, you know, just about your experience and just why that simple affirming yes can lead to happiness.
Well, it's fabulous. I know Shonda Rhimes, the fabulous person who has Grey's Anatomy and all those things, she wrote a book on her year of saying yes, and that was really inspirational. But with me, what happened, Jacques had died in February, and when it was getting time for New Year's, I was thinking, I'm not making any progress here. I've got to do something, and I didn't want to write New Year's resolutions because they'd never worked for me in the past. I'd write them, but that was, you know, you forget about them in a week or so. So I thought, what can I do? And I decided I'm going to have one thing this year that I'm going to focus on, one thing that I know that I'm absolutely going to commit to doing. And what that was to accept invitations, so essentially saying yes to invitations. And when that came to me, I thought, well, this is just weird because nobody's been inviting me to do anything. I hadn't been being social at all. But I thought, no, there's a reason this feeling came through me so strong that I needed to accept invitations. And as soon as I made the decision, the invitation started coming. And I had wonderful opportunities doing things that I never would have thought of to do if I had to figure out what I was going to do, just by saying yes. And it totally opened me up. It totally allowed me to see that I could do this on my own. I can be happy. I don't have to sit by myself and be sad all the time. I can make the most out of my life. And the invitations were totally unexpected. The first one was I got asked to be on the editorial board for the newspaper. And wow. It was a one-year position. And it was fascinating. It's so interesting to do. And I met so many neat people. And I was so happy that, because if I wouldn't have made that commitment, I'm not sure I would have said yes when they invited me. I would have talked myself out of it. But I didn't, because I'd made this commitment to say yes. And other things came along, like my husband Jacques was a philosopher and a bioethicist, and he was on the ethics committee for the local medical center. And they called me, and they said that there was a position available on that committee that I couldn't have, like his position, because that was a professional position, and mine would be a lay position. But they wanted me mm-hmm. to invite me to do that, because they figured since I was married to him that I would be a really appropriate person to be able to help them make the decisions that they made. And that was a wonderful, wonderful opportunity. And I did other things, like I was invited to create a film festival for our community, and I did. And I got invited to go to South Africa, and I did. And all these different things that, you know, I never would have thought about that. It never crossed my mind to go to South Africa, but I am so glad that I did and that I went with my friends that I went with. It was a really fabulous opportunity. And by making that commitment, it opened my eyes and my world to different things than I would have ever been able to come up with just on my own.
Wow. Now, I rarely get invitations, but I would love invitations. So I think I'm going to go ahead and, you know, make that a stated goal, you know, to say yes to invitations.
Uh-huh.
see what comes
Yeah, that's
my
all
way.
You have to do. That's right. You don't have to decide what those invitations are going to be. You just say, I'm going to say
right.
yes to whatever they are. And then, you know, some might work out and some might not be so good. Like somebody might invite you
right.
to a new restaurant and it's no good. But you have the experience of
right.
going there and knowing that you don't want to go back, you know.
Exactly. Those restaurants, I say, have gone twice, the first and last.
Yeah, that's right.
Exactly. Well, good. Well, I like that. I really like that. That's something I'm going to do myself. Now, I want to kind of spend a few minutes talking about your card set, the Grief and Happiness Cards, Gentle Support for Dealing with Grief and Finding Happiness. So tell us about the deck.
Well, the way that the deck came around was a few months after Ron died, one of his dear friends just dropped dead on his way home from work, and he was a younger man. He called my husband Dad, so that much of an age difference. And they were neighbors of ours on the mainland before we moved here to Maui. And I was so worried about his wife, because she wasn't at an age where she would have even been thinking about what would happen if her husband died. And I wanted to be able to support her more than just like through the funeral, because she was surrounded by tons of people at that time. And I was trying to figure out what I could do from afar. And I thought, I'm just going to write her every week. I'm going to put something in the mail so she'll have something to look forward to that'll be coming to her the same day every week. And so that would be 52 different things. So I made these little cards up that I printed off my computer that had a picture that I'd taken on Maui on the front, and then on the inside, I wanted to write something different every week that would be provide comfort and support and love for her. And I thought, well, I better make sure I've got 52 different things that I can write about before I start this project. So I sat down and I made myself a list of 52 different things, and it worked out really well. Well, as a writer, I've taught writing at the university for most of my career. I thought, this is an outline. So that's where my books came from. Actually, each book has 26 chapters, and each one of those chapters represents one of those 52 things that I wrote about in those cards to her. And when I was getting this most recent book published, the publisher asked me about it. She said, I love the idea of those cards you wrote. Have you thought about publishing them? And I said, well, yeah, I have, but I haven't been able to figure out how to do it because it just didn't seem cost effective anyway that I'd looked at, because I didn't really have the knowledge of how to look for it. And so she showed me some examples of cards that they had done, and I thought, oh, this is absolutely perfect. So what we did was it made a box set of cards. It's got 52 different cards in it, and each one of them has a different picture that I've taken here on Maui of all the beautiful things in nature that's here. You just feel like you've been on a vacation when you look at the cards. And then on the other side, it has one of the things from those 52 things that I wrote to her. And I can read you a couple real quick if you'd like me to. They're not long.
Yeah, that would be great. I would love to hear that.
Okay. This one, I'm just grabbing them randomly so that they're on all different
That's
kinds
great.
Of things.
Perfect.
This first one is cry when you need. It says, being alone can trigger tears. If it does, cry, sob, or scream if that's what you need. You may feel that sometimes you just need to cleanse and let the water run through you. Screaming and sobbing are okay. No judgment. Let it all flow out. You may not feel better afterwards, but that doesn't matter. What matters is that you do what you need to do, then keep moving forward.
Wow. And what's the picture of that that goes with that one?
That one is... it's a picture of, it's really pretty. I took it in a botanical garden here on the island, and it's a pathway, and it's all surrounded by beautiful green things, but you can see the light at the end of the path.
Wonderful. Good. Okay, great. And one more. That would be great, please.
One more. Okay. Do something for you. Embrace this moment and do something you've always wanted to do. Do you want to go on a cruise? Do you want to have a party? Do you want to take a class? Do you want to travel and visit your friend? It doesn't matter what it is. Experience it. Bask in the joy of new opportunity will bring, and know that these moments are essential to your grief journey.
Oh, that's a good one. That kind of really falls in that self-care that we were talking about.
Yeah, it does. And each one of them is different. They're totally different, subjects. And just you can pick them up and think, well, now maybe it is time for me to do that. With me, I went on a journey because I'd always wanted to go there. And I just did it. I surprised myself. And I'm so glad I did. It was fabulous.
That's great. That sounds like a wonderful. And the fact that there are 52 cards and you can kind of focus on one a week, it really, I think, you know, that kind of process really makes it instills, you know, the idea that, first of all, that it's not a quick fix, you know, I mean, in the sense that you can be going through the year, but also it's kind of a full year of working on various aspects of your life, you know, improving various aspects of your life. So in a way, it's like a program in that.
Mm-hmm. That, and it also makes a really good bereavement gift. Because, you know, people give flowers and they wilt. And this, you can give it to them and they've got it forever and can use it as they want to. Or you can do like I did after I sent those first 52 cards to my friend, I ended up having 6 other people, so a total of 7 within a couple year period that lost someone very close to them. And so I sent the cards that I was making at that time out to them once a week for a year for all of them, and I got the most wonderful feedback from the people saying how much they appreciated that support. And these are a good size cards. They're real nice and sturdy, but you could get a box of envelopes and put one of the cards in one of those envelopes every week and just send it to your friend who's dealing with grief, getting them one at a time and getting that support.
Wow, that's great. That's wonderful. Yeah, because, you know, right after someone loses someone, you know, that there's always a rush of people around and handling things, but then it kind of wanes, you know, as time goes on, and, you know, the support that was there immediately afterwards kind of diminishes. So in this particular case, you're providing a consistent, you know, form of support.
Yes. And that is so welcome to someone who's grieving.
Yeah, very much so. Now, you also are the facilitator of a group called the Grief and Happiness Alliance. Tell us about that alliance.
Well, that's something that I formed of because I had been helping people with writing through grief online, and I kept feeling like something was missing. And so I came up with this concept of teaching people that they can grieve and be happy at the same time, and that was inspired by Marcy Shymoff's book, Happy for No Reason. And with her permission, I've been using all that she's learned over her lifetime of studying about happiness. She's allowed me to use that to help teach happiness practices to people. And so now we get together every week on Zoom and have a gathering where we'll write together about grief, and then we talk about what we wrote, and it's in small groups so everybody gets to be heard and to listen to other people. And then we learn a happiness practice every week. And all of it is at no charge because we formed this Grief and Happiness Alliance nonprofit organization that pays for everything so that we can support people without charging them to get help with their grief.
Wow, that's a wonderful service to offer folks, you know, and especially in, you know, being able to do it via Zoom, you know, that eliminates a lot of geographic challenges for people to find a support group.
That's right. And we have people from all over the world, actually, that come to it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's neat because you're meeting different people from different societies, different cultures, different ways of doing things. And our group, most recently, we've had somebody from Saudi Arabia, somebody from Sweden, somebody from England, several people from Canada, New Zealand, Australia. So, and all across the United States, it's just, I think it's wonderful to meet all these different people and to get to support each other we've all got something in common, so it's real easy to talk to each other.
Absolutely, that's wonderful. Well, Emily, I have thoroughly enjoyed our conversation, just as I did in the first one a couple years ago, but this one has even more meat to it. So I want to if people want to get in touch with you or contact you, what would be the best way for them to do that?
Well, you can go through my website or our website, griefandhappiness.com, or my email is emily@griefandhappiness.com, and you're welcome to contact us here. If you go to that website, you can see where you make a reservation each week to go to the gathering if you'd like to attend that too, and we welcome you to come to that.
Great. Well, thank you for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Well, I'm so glad that you invited me back. That's just wonderful.
I am too. And I guess the sign-off would be mahalo?
Yes, mahalo. That's right. Thank you in Hawaiian. Mahalo and aloha.
Absolutely. So, well, thank you, Emily, and I look forward to keeping in touch and having you on for the next creation that you come up with.
That sounds great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Again, everyone, today my special guest has been Emily Thoreau, and we have been talking about her new Grief and Happiness Handbook and the cards. Again, you can find out more by visiting the website www.griefandhappiness.com. And everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again,
thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Remember, our show is available as a free podcast from Spotify, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Apple Podcasts, Blog Talk Radio, Amazon Music, and Audible. To follow our show on any of those platforms, visit biteradio.me and select the one you use most. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @BiteRadioMe. Until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.